This is the Knowledge Bandits Podcast. I'm your host, Daru, and I'd like to thank you for joining us today. Let's start the show. This is the Knowledge Bandits Podcast. I'm here today with Mr. Edose Ohen. He's a 29-year-old entrepreneur originally from Edo State, Nigeria, but currently living in Houston, Texas. He received his bachelor's degree in business administration from the University of Texas in 2009, as well as his MBA from the University of Houston in 2013. He's the founder and CEO of Glazed the Donut Cafe, Houston's only 24-hour gourmet donut shop, and it's actually ranked one of the top 10 donut shops in America. He's the director of HPO Global Group of Companies, which includes Alfa Dando and Alfa Sando, both oil and gas companies with operations in Nigeria, Colombia, Malaysia, the US, Mexico, and Saudi Arabia. He is also the founder and owner of Alfa O&O Networks, soon to be Wireless NG, known as AlphaNet, based in Nigeria, which is a fixed wireless internet service provider that specializes in connecting homes to eliminate the effects of the global divide. He is also the founder of Mena Water and Juice Factory, based in Lagos, Nigeria. Edose has been listed as one of Forbes Africa's top 30 under 30 best young entrepreneurs and is also the University of Houston's 2015 Rising Star awardee. I gave Edose a very brief introduction, but as you can tell, he's a very busy man, and I want to thank him for joining us today. Edose, I gave a brief introduction about you, but can you please fill in the gaps for us?
No problem at all. Again, my name is Edose Ohen. I am a Nigerian-American, born in Socorro, New Mexico. Lived in Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, and spent a lot of time in Nigeria and the UK. I consider myself a full-time entrepreneur.
Nice.
I totally embrace the entrepreneurship lifestyle. I feel like that's my calling, my passion. And I'm definitely 100% committed to global development and making a better Nigeria and also a better Pan Africa.
Great, great. That's really good to hear. It's always exciting to see people who want to help out with advancing African economies, and it seems like you're on your way to doing that.
Yes.
So we're just going to jump right in, and I want to know what fires you up in the morning, and what is your morning routine, and why is that routine important to you?
Okay, so it's kind of difficult because I'm on a 24-hour clock, and I've been on a 24-hour clock for a long, long time. A lot of the times, a lot of the business I do, specifically in Malaysia and in the Nigerian context, they're 7, 8, 10 hours ahead of us. So when we're sleeping, they're awake. So I'm pretty much always up, and my routine is not really regimented. It's basically come as you go. You know, sometimes you're fielding calls from Nigeria. There's a problem with this situation. How do you fix it? There's an issue with this shipment. There's an issue with this client. So I kind of don't really have a regimented schedule. So I'm just on a 24-hour clock.
Okay. Wow. That's interesting. Yeah, I guess I could see that with the different places that you operate, how it gets difficult just sticking to one schedule. But what is one thing that you have to get done within the day, whether it's working out or whatever the case is? If you don't get it done, you don't sort of feel accomplished that day.
I have to, no matter what. I have to wake up and pray. Whenever I wake up, that's the first thing I do to start my day. And I definitely have to work out sometime in the day, at least for an hour, because it gives me the ability to actually decompress and relax my mind and try not to think about all the stressors that I surround myself with.
Okay. Wow. That's really good. Prayer, as we always hear from Nigerian parents, prayer is the key.
It's the key.
And also working out, it helps clear the mind. So to all of you people listening right now, it's not just something fun to do. It's not just so you look great, but it's so your mind operates the way it should operate. So we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about one of the biggest parts of being an entrepreneur is being able to sustain yourself. So can you name a few ways that you bring in income right now?
So I think an entrepreneur is essentially a salesperson. Okay. You're selling something. You're always selling something. And for me, I have multiple industries that I'm actually in. In the food service industry, I have Glazed Donut Cafe. It's a relatively new business. We've been open for about year and a half, and it's 24 hours. So I am actively seeking out different markets for my products, whether it's businesses, whether it's the early morning meeting. I want you guys to have my donuts there. Or if it's trying to get that morning customer that needs that cup of coffee.
Yeah.
When it comes to the oil and gas side, especially in this market, in the down market, I am actively reaching out to my contacts, trying to get new projects, new opportunities to identify where we can help them save costs and make money in this down market. When it comes to telecommunications, I'm always looking at expanding. I am totally obsessed with technology. I'm totally obsessed with wireless technology specifically, and that's like my bread and butter. But I'm always trying to add new subscribers to our network, because when new subscribers come to our network, we generate more revenue from monthly subscriptions, which essentially pays my salary, right?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. It seems like you definitely keep busy, you keep your hands full. And I think one of the things that I want the Bandit listeners to get from that is sort of an entrepreneur is always looking for where the trends exist. So don't sort of be afraid of going where the trends exist and where you actually have some sort of expertise. It's okay to have multiple streams of income. And in fact, most entrepreneurs, I would say, that's sort of an essential part of being an entrepreneur, is being able to have some passive sources of income that you don't have to work to sustain too much.
Definitely. And I think it's worth noting, recently I learned that when you start making a little bit of money, it's really good to actually look into real estate. Because rental income is actually passive, and it's actually really, really good. It can support you in times where some of the other business opportunities aren't doing so well. So I think from an entrepreneurship standpoint, you want to be as diversified as possible, because markets are cyclical and they change. And you want to make sure you have enough when down markets are down, and just until they get back up.
Okay. Guys, that was a free tip that you just got from Edose. Look into real estate. So now we're going to talk a little bit about the challenges you faced as an entrepreneur. And we know every entrepreneur goes through some sort of down period, some sort of self-doubt. But I just want to get from you, what has been the lowest point you've experienced so far as an entrepreneur?
You know, most entrepreneurs will actually deny this, right? Because we never fail, right?
Yeah.
But I think the biggest challenge I had, which is going to sound pretty crazy, specifically with the industries that I'm in, was my donut shop. Okay. I developed the most amazing business plan. I thought that I had all my T's crossed and all my I's dotted, and I was so sure my plan was going to work. There was no doubt in my mind that this was going to be super successful and everything was going to flow. What ended up happening was everything that I thought was going to happen didn't, and I faced challenges and hurdles that I could not find solutions for. It was a total disaster. The first 6 months of my new business, it was pure chaos. We couldn't get anything done correctly. Inventory was always off. Product was always short. Customers were extremely angry. It just looked like we were a total disaster. And coming from the perspective that I actually built something that I really, really believed in, and I really believed in my skill set to actually get it done, and to see it literally failing every single day, I did not know what to do. And the crazy part about that is I still had to function for my other businesses, but I'm feeling like a failure at Glazed. So I'm like, oh my gosh, and it's just completely consuming me, because it's a 24-hour shop. So I'm hearing 24 hours of failure. And I'm literally like at the point to saying, like, what am I going to do? I don't like to fail. And I felt like the business was actually failing. And for me, watching that business tank at the very beginning broke my heart. And I think that was the lowest point I've been in this journey as an entrepreneur.
Wow. That's great storytelling abilities right there. I actually could sort of feel the emotion of distress that you felt, and you talked about how it started to affect you and your other businesses. And I think that's one thing to make sure of, is whatever you're getting into, it's not just going to be compartmentalized into one aspect or one area. So that's why sort of you go back to this this schedule of praying and working out every day. It really, really works wonders in terms of allowing you to be able to function day to day. And obviously you've sort of gone past that failure, quote unquote failure. And I want to get a sense from you. How did you push through that?
So, although everything was falling apart, I still had to hold it together. I realized that I may be losing customers, but I need to stay true to my marketing plan, because the foundational part of that business was the marketing aspect. Yeah. I needed to bring in new customers. I needed to reach different markets. I needed to push that product out there. And I stayed true to that. I never wavered when it came to marketing. My partners, my managers, my staff was like, you know, cool down, let's stop marketing, let's slow down, let's get our stuff together. But I didn't. I said, we can't. We had to continue to push forward, because if we stop now, we're going to be in a very, very bad position. And after about 6 months of operations, we were able to get our operations together from an inventory standpoint to a structural standpoint and to a production standpoint. But our marketing is actually what set us apart. Sticking true to our social media based marketing strategy, that organic grow from the people marketing, we were able to get on, you know, Fox 26 here in Houston, ABC 13, NPR, all of the food blogs, all of the front page of the local Houston Chronicle. And we were able to reach places that we could never have imagined. But if we were to have stopped pushing forward with that marketing strategy at the very beginning, we would not be where we are now. We would have affected, in my opinion, we would have failed. So staying true in spite of failure, in spite of everything falling apart, staying true to your mission and making sure you follow through. Because it could have been a total disaster if I listened to everybody and I stopped.
Very interesting. Two things I really picked up from that. Earlier on, you mentioned something about selling, and it seems like you would ascribe to the mantra, always be selling. It seems like you talked about sort of the synergies between the glazed donut shop and bringing people in for that to sample while you're having meetings for some of your other businesses, which I think is really intelligent to do. But you also said always be marketing, which, as an entrepreneur, sometimes we focus on building products so much, and I've experienced it where moving from the product development into the product marketing is very difficult. But it seems like you definitely had a grasp on that and were able to push through in spite of whatever the challenges were.
No, that's true. I think it's definitely, as an entrepreneur, effectively what you're doing is selling yourself, selling your ideas, selling your product. You can't stop selling. You can't stop pushing, because the second you do that, you're not doing anything. Yeah, so I think as an entrepreneur, your primary job is to sell. You are the driving force of your business. You are your ultimate revenue generator. When you stop selling, when you stop moving forward, the business stops.
Yeah.
You don't have anything to fall back on, really. It's your job to make sure you continue to sell. So I think it's staying true in spite of what's going on, staying true to that idea of continuing to push forward and selling whatever it is you're selling. If it's, you know, insurance, if it's, you know, dry cleaning, it doesn't matter. You always have to sell.
Okay, great. Yeah. And, another key thing I wanted to mention to the listeners is, you said you have to stay true. As an entrepreneur, you get to a certain point where you doubt yourself, you doubt the idea, and there's just so much doubt that enters that whole process. But it's great. I mean, you said you wrote down a very detailed business plan, and I'm sure that business plan sort of helped you stay on track when you began to doubt yourself.
Yeah, you have to remind yourself, especially when everything is falling apart, that there is a plan.
Yeah.
You really, it's one thing to say it, and it's another thing to actually experience it.
Yeah.
When everything is falling apart, you definitely begin to question whether or not you can actually do this. You ask yourself, why are you doing this? And then you have to really sit down and actually have some type of self-reflection in whatever your quiet time is, and say, you have to be able to answer that. I'm doing this because I believe in it. It is not, whatever you decide to do is not going to be, it's not going to always be easy at all. But circling back to when you referred to the business plan, the business plan was able to give me the reassurance that I did have a plan. Mm. I did spend 2 years developing this model. I know what I'm doing. And it gave me that affirmation that I needed I wasn't getting it from my customer base.
Wow. That's great. So Bandit listeners, just remember, sometimes the common trait of an entrepreneur is to be a spontaneous sort of person. At least that's how I describe myself. But planning and staying true to what you've already set out to do is very important. And just one more question for you. What are some of the hidden challenges in your industry? Some things that you didn't know or didn't expect to happen?
I would say I'm going to focus on going into the Nigerian context. Mm. Being a Nigerian in the diaspora, being born in effectively New Mexico, but being raised in Houston, mm-hmm. for me going back to Nigeria, I really didn't have any direct exposure to the market. I just had a lot of, hearsay and a lot of reading. Mm. So when I actually went back with the ideas from the environment in which I existed, my ideas and strategies didn't work initially because I realized that it's a totally different market that I actually had to wrap my head around. Mm. There are things that are going on a day-to-day basis there that are totally separate from what's going on here on a day-to-day basis. Mm. So referring to AlphaNet, which is soon to be Wireless NG, mm-hmm. I had to find a different way to get customers connected to the internet. Mm. You run into the situations where you don't have consistent power, so you have power challenges. Mm. Availability of material is not as simple as saying, okay, well, I don't have, 100 feet of Cat 6 cable. I can just go to Best Buy or Circuit City or, mm-hmm. well, Circuit City is no longer in existence, but or Micro Center mm-hmm. and buy some. You can't. You mm-hmm. literally have to order it and wait 3 or 4 days to ship it and then go through the clearing process mm-hmm. to be able to get that. So you have to plan for those potential disasters that I wasn't aware of. So the first year of the internet access, the internet company, I was getting slammed left and right from everything from how do we power the inverter? How do we get enough gas? What's the cost of gas? What's the cost of operations? And all my projections were totally off because I didn't fully understand the conditions of the environment in which I was operating in. Mm. So I had to really learn that market. I had to really study and really adjust my model to fit the environment in which I was trying to operate in. Mm. And I think that although there's a list of challenges, I think the first one was actually understanding where I was doing business, truly getting a grasp of what I am doing here, how I'm going to do it here, and how I'm going to make sure it continues to be successful there. I think that was the knowledge gap was the biggest hidden challenge for me. Hmm.
Interesting. Wow. A lot of great detail that you gave for us right there. One thing I want to just mention is to be successful, especially in a different market like Nigeria. I've heard so many people say over and over again that Nigeria is its own beast and doing business there is a certain kind of challenge. But it seems from you, it took curiosity, it took drive, and you have a sort of resilience that allows you to keep pushing on when you face obstacles that seem like they can't be solved. The power issue, for example, is something that we hear over and over again. And for you to actually take that and work with that and push past that is sort of a great example of resilience.
Yeah, I think it also comes with a little bit of innovation as well, like thinking outside of the box, because once you understand that, look, you're not going to have any power, it's either you don't do it or you come up with a solution. Mm. And knowing that there's solar panels out there that you can actually develop a relatively cheap solar power solution that can actually power a data tower, you realize, let's just do this. It may cost a little more, but it's going to be a solution that's sustainable for that environment.
And Adose, can you actually talk a little bit about what role innovation plays in starting a business in Nigeria?
Yeah, so I think that innovation is actually key. In the context of the Nigerian environment, when you understand and you know that you can have a power limitation, you either make the decision to say, I'm not going to move forward with this, or I'm going to come up with a solution to actually make this work. And just putting pieces of different technologies together, saying, you know what, why don't I just develop a solar panel solution, a solar power solution that's going to be able to be sustainable in this environment and write that off and continue to move forward, is just an example of innovative thinking in that environment. It's not as cheap as just using, you know, a traditional power grid, but it solves the problem and you move forward with that part of your project. So I think resilience and innovation, not accepting the word no, is key.
Very good. I think those are really strong words to live by, is be innovative and be resilient. So we've talked about some of the challenges, but I want to shift gears and give it a more upbeat feel. So I want to ask you, what has been your most defining moment as an entrepreneur?
Honestly, I think that when my friends actually told me randomly that, hey, Elsa, did you know you're on, or they call me, my friends call me Elsa. Did you know you were on Forbes Africa Best Entrepreneurs list? Wow. And I was like, what? Like, what do you mean? Like, and then like they, you know, I went on Twitter and I saw like Glaze being retweeted and I was like, what? I was actually, I think that was probably a big moment for me, because at before that, you know, even after that, I never really received any recognition. I mean, I never really cared for it. It was just work. But I think I had to really sit back and think about, like, wow, I actually did something that was of value to people. And I was actually proud of what I did. And I think that a lot of times when you're in the grind on a day-to-day basis and you're always working, you don't realize what you're actually doing. And I think that's probably the curse of entrepreneurship. Like, you keep pushing, you keep doing what you have to do to make sure everything works, but you never sit back and look at what you've created. It's always, how can we do this better? Or what are we going to do different? Or how are we going to make sure we're profitable? Or where can we get, what can we increase profitability? It's never a moment where you just say, well, we're doing well. And up until that point, I never really just said, hey, I'm doing a good job.
That's interesting. And I just want to note that it took some other people to tell you that you were on Forbes. And I mean, Forbes is a really big thing. To be on Forbes Africa is kind of a big deal. But to say that you didn't even realize until someone else brought it up shows that your reasons for doing this are not just for notoriety. It's not for making a name for yourself, but in fact, it's to make a difference and sort of leave your mark on this earth in any way that you can.
No, without a doubt, my circle of friends are probably tired of hearing me say this. I say this all the time. The one thing that I want to do is, no matter how crazy it sounds, is change the world. And change the world, in my definition, is by being able to make an impact in the business endeavors that I actually go into. Like, we're not fully operational yet. But we actually have a clean water, a clean water and juice factory in Nigeria that we're getting ready to start. And I wanted to do that because I want to be able to make sure that people can have, you know, a solid world-class water factory that they can have 100% confidence in, that the water is actually treated through reverse osmosis, UV filtration, and it's actually really, really, really good water that tastes clean, and it's with the global standards. And I want to connect people to the internet, specifically to reduce the effects of the digital divide. Because when I first went to Nigeria, I went to my familial farm and I was looking around and I was like, there's such a lack of information dissemination around this area, because people are using archaic technologies to do things. People are still like using their hands. And I'm like, if only people can have access to information, it'd be so much easier. And when I couldn't use my phone to Google things to find out, okay, which type of palm oil equipment do we need to actually make this farm work, or what can we be doing better? I was like, I was stuck on an island, and I just felt like you have to be wired in to be able to communicate, to be able to see things, be able to learn things. That's why I wanted AlphaNet to start, specifically in areas where the major providers weren't focused on, and especially at a very, very low cost. I mean, it's not the most profitable business. We try to make sure we maintain a certain level of profit margins, but mm-hmm. it's also good because it's giving people access to the internet. And to me, access to the internet is access to information, which makes you a better student, makes you a better business person, makes you a better person. Mm-hmm. And that's key. So I want to make sure that I'm doing my part every single day to try to change the world, to try to provide jobs that pay people decent wages and just really support this change that has to happen sooner or later.
Wow. I'm almost left speechless here. And I just have to ask, I'm going off script a little bit, but just from all that you've been talking about, how do you find the time? Because some people have 9-to-5s and they are juggling a business idea around in their mind, but they just say there's no time. But obviously that's not an excuse for you. So how do you find the time and how do you make the time?
So this is interesting. When I graduated in 2009, from school, it's kind of like the financial crisis of the times, right? It was a disaster. Nobody was hiring. I didn't really have any job offers. So I literally graduated looking for a job. And I sent out my resume to about 300 companies in like 2 weeks. And I got all but like maybe 3 calls. And I was truly like defeated. I was like, wow. I just spent the last 5 years. I took an extra year, of course. It was college, right?
Yeah.
I spent the last 5 years of my life trying to get a job, and I don't have one. But luckily, I got a job, and I started it, and I spent about 4 years in corporate America. And then one day, I had a conversation with a couple of my uncles, the old guys.
Yeah.
And they were like, why don't you go back to Nigeria and just look around and see if there's anything you want to do? And we know we always hear those stories about going back and how, oh, you can make so much money and all these different things. And I was just like, nah, I'm fine, whatever. But I truly went back. And as soon as I got there, being the MBA mindset I was at the time, I looked around and I was like, there really is so much that can be done. So when I got back to Houston, I spent about a week thinking, and I walked into my boss's office and I said, hey, I'm gonna put in my 2 weeks notice.
Wow.
I'm gonna spend my time developing business ideas here. And essentially, that's how I found the time. I left my 9-to-5 and I jumped out there just to see what was going to happen.
Wow. That's a very bold move. But sometimes, bandits, when the time is right, you sort of just feel it in your gut. It's something that you can't necessarily explain, but you just know that the time is ready and it's ripe. And one thing I want to say is I usually say this a lot. I say necessity breeds innovation. And it sounds like after you were done with school, there was this sort of deep necessity, and I'm sure you were innovative in some of the ways you went about finding a job in a tough financial crisis.
I'm telling you, it was interesting. This is a funny story. The way I actually found my job was I literally was on Google every second looking for new postings for, you know, IT administrators, network engineers, systems administrators, anything, right? And I was on it so much that literally, as soon as I refreshed the page, there was this posting for a systems admin position. I immediately clicked the link and I submitted my resume. And I got a call in about 3 minutes later.
Wow.
And the lady was like, how did you submit your resume so fast? I'm actively searching for a job. And she was like, okay, cool. I want to schedule an interview with you.
Wow.
And next day I had an interview. And she said, you know what? I want you to meet the hiring manager for the actual company, because it was a recruiting company. Okay. And I sat down with him 2 days later. We talked. And he actually went to my university. He actually got it was in my degree program. And he actually knew one of the professors that we all love. And we connected and we vibed. And about a month and a half later, they offered me a job. After they told me, they interviewed about 45 people after me for that position. But since I was the first person that got it, that got that interview, it stuck with them, and they offered me the position.
Wow. And it's just quite a funny story, but I think it's actually really indicative of how you are as an entrepreneur, is you're always looking for an opportunity, trying to stay ahead of the competition. And in that job market, that's essentially what you did. And it seems like you use that same strategy as you start your different ventures.
That's true. I think that always being on and always being active and always trying to push the envelope is necessary, especially when you become an entrepreneur, because you don't have anything else to fall back on. Like, this is your livelihood. This is the path you decided to choose. And this is where you're going to be, hopefully, for the rest of your life. So the passion has to come from you. The desire has to come from you. Nobody's going to give it to you. There's no supporting cast. It is you. So,
Very interesting. And I think it sounds like you'd be a fan of the tagline for Apple is think different.
Of course.
Yeah. All right. So now we're going to enter the rapid fire round. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, let's go. So what was holding you back from taking the step to be an entrepreneur?
Time.
Care to elaborate a little bit more on that?
Yes. I think that you get accustomed to doing things a certain type of way. When you're working a 8-to-5, right? You're essentially on company's time. Yeah. So you're working on projects. You are doing different things. You're building up your resume. You are working to actually complete the task of your job on a day-to-day basis to be able to receive your payment. So depending on how hard you work, afterwards, you're tired. So you don't have enough energy or time to focus on your dream. So you get stuck in that cycle of doing that every single day, every single day. And most of your time is actually going to that business. So when I went to Nigeria and I realized this is what I want to do, I quit. And my time opened up and I was able to focus on different aspects, talk to different people, raise different money, and start different businesses.
Interesting. What quality would you say most contributes to your success?
That's simple. Drive. In one word, drive. I can't see myself giving up, especially if I'm passionate about it. I believe that if it's something that I want to do, if it's something that's set out for me, I'm going to do everything possible to make sure it's done. And I won't quit. I will find a way, or I'll make one.
What quality do you wish to improve on?
You know, I need to be able to turn off work and develop a genuine relationship. Because, sadly, every relationship I get into doesn't work out because I'm married to my work. So the ability to turn it off,
And what's the best advice you've ever received and who was it from?
From my father. He told me before I started work, under promise, over deliver.
Very, very wise words. You hear it over and over again, but that's because it's true.
It is. I cannot explain how true that is. It's better to tell somebody, look, I can get this done in 3 months and deliver it in one than it is to say I can get it done in a month and deliver it in a month and a half. Without a doubt.
Wow. Yeah. That's good. Bandit listeners, I hope you take note of that. Do you feel a sense of belonging where you are right now?
This is my life. I live, breathe, eat what I do. This is me. This, all of this is an extension of myself. These are literally my dreams. These are literally my thoughts, my passions, my desires. Like, this is what I want to do. Everything that I'm in, I love. I know, like, the back of my hand. And if I didn't know before, I learned. And I was a student to whatever game it was. And I can't admit, it's a part of me, just like my fingers, just like my skin, just like my heart, just like my, it's me. So I'm here. This is, I can't imagine not being here. So I do.
Interesting. And when did you stop looking at your business as a project and more as an actual business?
I struggle with that. I do. I still view it as my babies. Like, they are a business, right? And you have to, like, focus and structure it as a business. I'm a student of business. But at the same time, to me, I take it personal. I still take it personal. I take it personal whenever somebody doesn't like one of my donuts. I take it personal when somebody doesn't, you know, says the internet service is slow, or I take it personal when one of our clients aren't pleased with some of the work we're doing for them in oil and gas. I take it personal. So I view them as a business, but I still view them as my babies. So it's still a learning process for me.
All right. And what are you reading right now?
Robert Greene, Mastery. I have a fascination with being able to truly understand the human condition, specifically the mind. One of my good friends and business partners recommended the book to me. I read The 48 Laws of Power, of course, in college. And, you know, he told me, you know, you should read Robert Greene's Mastery. And I fell in love with it because it truly gives you a different perspective of the human mind and the human condition. And it's really allowed me to be extremely strategic in not only my day-to-day life, but also my business. It's a really, really good book.
All right. Let's see. What is one internet resource or application that you couldn't live without, aside from Google?
Oh, man. Internet resource or application. Instagram. I'm sorry. I love Instagram. Yeah. Like, I feel like I can connect to people that I don't really see on a day-to-day basis. I can see what's going on in different parts of the world. I can understand marketing strategy. I like social media is my marketing platform. It's free. It's like a direct connection to your friends, your customers. It's just right there. I love Instagram. I don't know, Instagram. I'm starting to get into Snapchat a little bit, but Instagram is like the bread and butter.
And I'm going to say you're really showing your true entrepreneur colors, because most people who mention Instagram will say, oh, I like the pictures. I like looking at what other people are doing. But no, you're talking about how you can leverage it as a marketing tool, which which I think is quite interesting.
That's my medium of connecting to my customer base.
And I just want to know, we touched a little bit on this, but what do you do to unwind from a hectic schedule, and what's sort of your guilty pleasure?
You know, I'm still trying to find a way to unwind, because I am, as I said before, I'm literally online and connected 24 hours a day. So it's still, again, it's a struggle. And I hope one day I'll be able to fully pull myself off and disconnect from reality one day, but not right now. But I like to talk to, like, sit with my friends and talk about, and even this is still part of it, but I guess this is my guilty pleasure, is focusing conversations on the current state of conditions, global development, Pan-Africanism, and trying to improve Nigeria. It's not really business, but it's like what we like to discuss. We spend so many hours as a group. My friend Eric, my friend Richard, Bobby, TJ, Chetta, Bo, we're always discussing these things. And that's like how I disconnect, because we get into very heated debates, because everybody has different perspectives and different thoughts. And it gives me the ability to like focus my energy on something else. So, yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Very, very interesting. So I think that's the end of the rapid fire round. And I want to say that you gave some very insightful answers that I think the Bandit listeners are going to appreciate.
Okay.
And now we sort of switch gears. We're going to cool down a little bit. And I want to say, other than you mentioned, Mastery by Robert Greene, and you also mentioned the 48 Laws of Power, but outside of that, what is one book that you would recommend to the Bandit listeners?
Thinking Fast, Slow. Again, I'm fascinated with how the mind works. And, the book talks about the two systems of the mind, system one and system two. System one is the, you know, the computer part of your brain, the simple task. When you're driving and you forget where you're going, you just automatically get on autopilot. The basic calculations, 1 + 1, 2, and just understanding green, red, and all the different colors, just simple things that your brain does. But then it also talks about system two, which is the higher level of processing. When your simple system one can't do something, it kicks into system two. And I was just fascinated by that and just truly understanding how our minds work. Because I think from an entrepreneur, we have to figure out how to leverage our mind, because we're creating things and we need to always be innovative. And it's really good to understand how the mind truly works and what your body is actually doing. Because if you're always on, you need to figure out how to make yourself more efficient. And I think, you know, Thinking Fast, Slow is a really, really good book to just truly understand the psychology of the mind, the anatomy of the mind, and listen to somebody that knows a lot about the human mind.
Hmm. Very good. I actually haven't read that yet, but I'm definitely going to check it out. And so we haven't touched on this so much, but I know it's definitely something that you keep your eye on. So I want to ask you, who are your mentors?
I think that I have a good core group of people that I lean on. But if I were to say that I have a single mentor, I would say it's definitely my my father. And it's not the type of mentorship which is traditional. It's just watching him, seeing what he was able to accomplish in the conditions in which he found himself, and just knowing what he does on a day-to-day basis. To me, that's the ultimate mentor. You know, coming from a random village in Edo State, literally climbing trees and trying to pay, you know, the rent and buy food for the family, and walking miles literally to school every day and acing all your tests in those conditions, and finding a way to leave Nigeria, get a scholarship, a Fulbright scholarship, go to New Mexico where I was born, get your master's in record time, and then go to Oklahoma, get your PhD in petroleum engineering, and become one of the first black professors there in petroleum engineering department. And just bringing us all here and raising us all up, just he's without a doubt my greatest mentor.
Wow. And I want to say, so mentorship, as you mentioned, can also be this sort of hands-off experience where you just look at someone. And one thing to remember, entrepreneurs, is that someone is watching you. So, I mean, however creepy or whatever that sounds, someone is observing you, and your life can be sort of a mentorship to someone else. So just be mindful of that. And also, you mentioned having a group of people outside of your dad, but a group of people that you bounce ideas off of, that you sort of collaborate with. And I think that's really important, is to surround yourself with like-minded people that'll help you grow.
Definitely. Definitely.
And what advice would you give to people who are listening that are afraid to take that next step they know they need to take?
Surround yourself with some friends that are going to push you over that edge. I have a good core group of friends of mine. I consider them brothers and sisters that really push me and don't allow me to not chase my dreams. And I think I was blessed to be able to have them. But I think it's that type of affirmation from people that know you, that say, you know what, you can actually really do this. It makes it easier to it makes it that much easier to be able to go pursue something that people think are crazy. Because for me, when I said I was going to make a 24-hour donut shop in Houston, Everybody in the industry said I was crazy because I have never operated a restaurant business or worked in hospitality my entire life, right?
Yeah.
But my friends were the first people. My sister, first and foremost, was the first person to invest in a project, and my friends followed suit. And that type of affirmation made it easier for me. So I think it's really important to make sure you surround yourself with people that truly believe in you and will make it easier for you to chase your dreams. And I guess the second piece of advice is there's never going to be a perfect time. You're never going to find perfect conditions.
Yeah.
You're never going to be able to say, okay, the best time is right now. It's that gut feel. It's that instinct. It's that moment when you know that this is what you want to do. And you can delay it, you can postpone it, but I mean, I know it's a classic saying, but the best time is always now.
Interesting. And I think it was either Reid Hoffman or Paul Graham who said, being an entrepreneur is almost like jumping off a cliff and assembling a parachute before you hit the ground.
Yes.
And sometimes you just have to have faith in your own abilities. It comes with the territory. You sort of have to be, confident in your abilities, confident in yourself and have faith that you'll be able to accomplish what you've set out to accomplish.
Of course.
And as we wind down, I just want to ask, you mentioned a little bit about talking about sort of what your prescription would be for Nigeria with some of your friends. So I just want to ask that in sort of a more direct way. So what do you think is the prescription for Nigeria?
I don't think there's a simple answer to that. I think that there are many things that actually have to happen. And I don't even know where to start, but I think that Nigerians as a whole have to have this collective understanding of we can't accept the status quo, right? The standards that are accepted now should not be accepted, right? We have to demand more. We have to demand better roads. We have to demand better systems. We have to demand better politicians. We have to demand better for ourselves because our generation, specifically the millennials, have to work to make the conditions of that country better because I don't think there's going to be a better time for that than now because we have so much interest in so many Nigerians, so many people across the world that want Nigeria to be a better place, not only for the people that are there now, for the people that want to come back. We have to use our collective knowledge, our collective financial strength, our collective abilities to actually contribute to making that country better. And there's so many different places where you can start. There's so many different things you can say about Nigeria, but I think it just starts with us demanding more and not accepting the status quo.
Wow. So listeners, you've heard that. That's a call to action. And I think you would say that applies to Nigerians, that applies to Kenyans living in diaspora, that applies to almost everyone living outside of their countries, is don't accept the status quo. We need to demand more. As we're about to say goodbye, I just want to ask, what is the best way for people to connect with you? Because I mean, it's been so inspiring talking to you for the past hour or so. How can we find you on Twitter, your website, email, Instagram, just the whole nine?
I think again, Instagram is my baby. So I'm on Instagram at Edose, EDOSE.Ohen. I'm always on there. I'm not really on Twitter. I rarely get on there. But Instagram is where I am always. My email address is edosa.ohen@gmail.com. And I mean, I don't have a personal website, but you can definitely visit my business websites at eatglazed, E-A-T, glazed.com, A-O-N-O, networks.com, and also wireless.ng. or wirelessng.com.
Wow. So you can see he's a very busy man. He's giving you, dropping all the links. So pay attention to that. And also, if you subscribe to our newsletter, we'll be sending you that information, make it more accessible for you to have. And finally, for those who have just been so inspired and would want to explore some sort of internship opportunities or some sort of mentorship with you, do they just connect with you through your email and Instagram, or is there anything else that they can do?
No, just connect with me. I'm big on mentorships because I think that my friends are some of my biggest mentors besides my father, and us working together and us helping each other is the best way forward. And I do that a lot here in Houston, but I'm a call away, an email away, and I definitely want to do my part to change the world. So I'm here.
Great. Adose, thank you so much for this. I know on behalf of the Bandit listeners, we all say thank you, and we appreciate the time you gave us today. And we'll catch you later.
All right, thank you.
This is the Knowledge Bandits podcast. We want to thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Overcast, or Stitcher. You can also follow Knowledge Bandits on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And as always, Bandits, stay inspired.